What we are looking at here is the areas where trust is most important to the federal government and to federal employees. So the idea here is, you know, feds need to trust that they can report waste, fraud, and abuse without negative impacts. We're talking about things like whistleblowers here, the Hatch Act, sexual assaults in the military. You know, the government needs to trust its employees with information, security clearances, making sure that federal employees are properly vetted, making sure that they can trust their employees with classified information. And then the other thing that we're going to look at in this series is whether there's a new model of trust between feds and their supervisors and agencies, and really what it means to be a government employee today. And then finally, we're going to look at where improvements have been made and other solutions to some of these issues of trust that are out there.
Well, I know we've got some great interviews of the on the federal drive for this. We've got Susan Grundman from the Merit Systems Protection Board, mm-hmm. who sees what happens when trust breaks down and people feel they need some adjudication going on. Also, Carolyn Lerner has been working hard. Remember, there were some really serious problems at the Office of Special Counsel during her predecessor's reign when he was almost went to prison for different practices. So she's been rebuilding there. And so we talked to some of those leaders. Also, the sexual assault issue in the military. There's been an overhaul of the law concerning that. And we'll be speaking with a judge advocate general on how that might help not only get better legal treatment of the people involved, but also the bigger issue of restoring that essential trust.
Absolutely. And then, you know, those, there's some other issues that other shows and, you know, In Depth will be speaking about and that we're doing on the web. For example, Jason Miller is going to be looking at whether or not the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act should include protections for folks in the intelligence community. Currently, they do not, but
big
should they?
Big debate in Washington.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Another thing that we're going to be taking a look at, as we said earlier, is the Hatch Act. And we've put together on the web a quiz for federal employees to test their Hatch Act knowledge and see whether or not they know what they actually are allowed and not allowed to do. And we're also reaching out. We've reached out to the unions, AFGE, NTEU, some of the other federal employee groups like FEW, Young Government Leaders, and we've asked them to tell us what they're hearing from their members about this trust or lack of trust between federal managers, federal agencies, and their employees, and kind of moving forward, what this trust means moving forward for federal employees and federal agencies. You know, how does it change how the government operates?
Well, that's right. You need trust ultimately to be able to deliver the mission, because if people don't trust one another, you just don't get the right level of work quality and cooperation and productivity. Now, we've launched a survey, and that got a pretty good response. Tell us some of the highlights.
Absolutely. So far, we've gotten about 1,500 responses from federal employees out there, and we're looking for more. So please, by the end of today, the end of Friday, go online, check out our survey. It's right there on the homepage, federalnewsradio.com, and take the survey. And the topic is, we want to know from you, what is the level of trust between you and your federal manager? You know, does the government need to rebuild trust with its employees? Is a lack of trust causing feds to leave agencies? Are there enough protections in place for whistleblowers? Do feds trust the background investigation process to properly vet their colleagues? These are all questions that are in the actual survey that we're really, you know, we want to know the answer to, so that we can then include this information in our series next week. And again, that series will debut on Tuesday and run through Thursday of next week.
We're speaking with Julia Ziegler, Federal News Radio's web manager. And on that last point about background checks, our own Jack Moore has been doing a very deeply researched series on background checks. And the last part will talk about that issue, which is also coinciding with the series, because I guess if you have a background check that results in a person who has cleared background and then shoots 12 people to death in the Navy Yard,
it's a problem.
A problem.
Absolutely. So Jack has actually been doing a very fascinating series, as you said, on this issue of security clearances and the security clearance process. It's a four-part series. As you said, the last part will be part of our special report next week. That last part will air on Tuesday. And Jack's series has looked at a few different angles. First, His first piece looked at USIS, and that's the firm that does most of the background investigations for OPM. Justice has now joined a suit against USIS, and in this suit, they allege that USIS signed off on more than 600,000 background checks that weren't properly vetted. So Jack takes a look at the latest issues in that case and really digs deep into it as well. I mean, if you've seen the stack of research material on his desk, you know how much research has gone into these pieces. It really was, there's some information in this first piece about USIS. You know, no one else has reported, so I urge people to go ahead and read it. Then he took a look at this very interesting angle. And that angle is when background check investigators are caught doing something wrong, accidentally or maybe on purpose, they face criminal charges. It used to not be this way, but a few years ago, OPM really started cracking down on background investigators. And when they do something wrong, they face criminal charges sometimes. That means jail time. Now, in the case against USIS, that's a civil suit. So no one there is going to be facing criminal charges. There's no criminal charges that have been filed against anyone who works at USIS. So what USIS is facing is monetary damages, right? That's what a civil suit would, you know, would find if they find them to have done some wrongdoing.
So maybe one of the questions in the whole affair is, does criminalizing everything necessarily get you better results?
Correct.
Or greater trust?
Correct. Absolutely. And then the third piece of Jack's series, he looked at the quality of OPM's background checks. You know, after 9/11, there was this really huge increase in the demand of security clearances. And DOD couldn't get them all done at the time. Then it switched over to OPM, leading the charge on these background checks. But now there's some questions as to whether or not the quality processes are in place to make sure that these background checks are being accurately completed.
That's right. There's an old expression in computer system development where developers say, you want better, faster, and cheaper, pick two.
Right. You can't have all three. Exactly. And so Jack takes a look at that, and that story is on our website right now, so people should check it out, federalnewsradio.com. And then next week, that final piece, he's going to be looking at the solutions. How do we get from Aaron Alexis and Edward Snowden to a place where the background check process is perhaps a little bit more buttoned up?
And that whole idea of continuous monitoring of people, just like they're doing with systems, continuous monitoring of people.
Absolutely.
Sounds like a great idea, but it sounds really hard to operationalize on a mass scale.
Right. Absolutely. So how often should people's background checks be, you know, redone, recompleted? And also taking a look at whether or not DOD should have its background check process brought back in-house. Should OPM be doing most of the DOD background checks? There's some folks out there who believe that DOD should regain that power.